From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Cedar Rapids is the latest city in Iowa to install red light cameras at intersections. Other cities are thinking about installing them too, while some states are voting to ban them. In our first half hour, we debate the pros and cons of red light cameras with representatives from law enforcement, the insurance industry, and the American Civil Liberties Union. Then we'll discuss a new edition of the popular History Channel program, Modern Marvels, which explores the topic of eggs and features several Iowa State University experts. That's all coming up. First, a look at this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Should we use automatic photo technology, so-called red light cameras, to catch people running red lights? That's the main question we look at in our first half hour. Cedar Rapids is the latest city in Iowa to install red light cameras at some intersections. Within the past few days, they've been installed in Cedar Rapids and will become operational in the coming days. And with this move, Cedar Rapids follows in the footsteps of the Iowa cities of Clive, Council Bluffs, Davenport, and Sioux City. All of these cities have operational red light cameras at some intersections. And other cities in Iowa are thinking about installing them, too. Muscatine, for example. Meanwhile, some states have real concerns here about this trend. They have voted to ban them. Maine, Mississippi, and Montana banned red light cameras last year, joining at least four other states, Nevada, New Hampshire, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. So in the next few minutes, we want to debate the pros and cons of red light cameras with my guests. Lieutenant Gary Walker of the Clive Police Department. He joins us by phone, I believe, from Clive. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Also joining us, Russ Rader of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Good afternoon to you, Russ.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And in our Des Moines studio of Iowa Public Radio, Ben Stone, Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
It's good to be with you.
Let's start off with Lieutenant Gary Walker on the ground there in Clive. These cameras are designed to catch red light runners, those who are speeding through intersections. You've had red light cameras out in operation at several intersections for how long?
It first started in June of 06, mm-hmm. Then we suspended it in 07 until the Supreme Court ruled that they were a good tool to use.
So back in action in 08, so you've had several years of experience with these. How do you choose the intersections to use them in, to set them up?
There was a study done on these intersections where we had a high number of violators, and also these four intersections where we have them. We've had fatalities over the past years.
Mm-hmm. How do the law enforcement people feel about the cameras now that they've been in use for several years?
We believe it's a great tool. It helps us. We don't have enough officers to be out there, and it's just a good tool for us to use.
A good tool. So you don't have enough officers to check all these intersections 24/7. So if it's automated, you can have police officers do other things, for instance.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's a money saver, and it increases safety is what you're saying.
It does.
Okay. Let's go to Russ Rader. How effective are these cameras in reducing red light running violations?
The cameras are very effective. There's been a lot of research done in the United States and around the world where photo enforcement technology is used. Generally, with red light cameras, the studies have found a 40% to 50% reduction in red light running violations and about a 25% to 30% reduction in injury crashes. Mm-hmm. So red light cameras are an effective tool, and they're in use in more than 400 communities around the country right now.
Are there any estimates in the number of people who, without these cameras, would have been injured or killed?
Well, we know part of the reason that red light cameras began to be used was the reason that Lieutenant Walker cited was that red light running is a problem, and you can't have officers at every intersection all the time. So about in 2008, 762 people were killed and about 137,000 were injured in crashes involving red light running.
Okay. Ben Stone, let's go to you with the Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. You have a different take on this in a recent opinion piece in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. You called red light cameras insidious Orwellian devices. Give us your arguments against employing these this technology.
Well, I wish I had more time because there's a lot to be said, but let me emphasize a couple things. First of all, the evidence cited by Mr. Rader is quite inconclusive. There is a tremendous amount of research that does not demonstrate what he's claimed.
Specifically, the claim you dispute is that there aren't people being killed by red light runners and injured?
No. I'm stating that rigorous studies by researchers other than those funded directly by the insurance industry have often found that a good analysis of data, including data before the cameras were in place at the same intersections and afterward, demonstrate that it is far from conclusive that these actually promote safety. And actually, many of the researchers have concluded that these devices actually create more danger because of people slamming on their brakes to avoid going through the light. Another aspect I'd like to point out is that one of the things that we've learned through the use of these over the last several years is that a lot of the revenue generated by these, and they create unbelievable revenues for cities. In the state of Texas, in 1 year, almost $100 million was collected from various cameras around the state. A lot of the revenue generated from these cameras is not from people, you know, blowing through the intersection that's obviously very dangerous, and you know, nobody wants to see that allowed or encouraged. But most of the revenue in many jurisdictions is from people turning right on a red. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that it's often not even just the rolling red right-hand turn. People will stop behind the big wide stop line, and then they'll pull up to see better because you have to pull up to be able to see sometimes, and then they'll turn right. In some studies in Chicago by the newspapers there, they found that in some jurisdictions, 64% to 100% of the revenue generated at some of these intersections was from people making right-hand turns. Mm-hmm. The reason I point that out is that right-hand turns have been statistically shown by the Department of Transportation in one study that it's basically 3 in 10,000 accidents are from people turning right on a right-hand on a red light.
Okay, so you're saying technicalities here, people being caught off guard and the citizens, drivers being soaked for money because communities are under pressure with their budgets, if I can sum that up succinctly.
Yeah, I mean, basically, there's a whole industry here. The traffic camera industry, it's been invested in by Goldman Sachs and IBM. There's a lobbying industry that goes into communities and into state legislatures and showers money on politicians to get them to adopt these procedures. And then the cities generate tremendous revenue from these. And my only point is that the safety benefits, whatever they may be, and I think that's an open question.
Mm-hmm. You don't acknowledge any safety benefits, that any lives or any injuries have been prevented, or any lives have been saved or injuries prevented.
Well, it's not that simple, Ben. I'm just saying that the claims by the industry that there's tremendous safety benefits derived from these is not an easy question to answer, and that there's tremendous amounts of studies by academics that have said that that's simply not the case. My only point is that it's disproportionate. When you are – there was one traffic camera in California that generated $1 million of mm-hmm. income in 1 month mm-hmm. because everybody was turning right.
Okay,
there was no accidents.
Okay, I want to get a response to the main points that you've made. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a bad thing if they generate money. If they could generate money and be benefiting us safety-wise, couldn't they?
Yeah, that is correct, and I want to just briefly address 2 points.
This is Russ Rader, right?
Yeah.
Russ Rader of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. Go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, the research is not in dispute about the benefits of the cameras. It's very clear that they provide safety benefits. But the ACLU representative makes a good point on the issue of the right-hand turns and some of these other things. You know, unlike Clive and probably many of the cities in Iowa that have done a good job of looking carefully at which intersections to put the cameras, looking at which ones are the problem intersections. We've had a number of communities, unfortunately, that have handed the ACLU a lot of ammunition, in that they have set up these programs in a way that has not generated public support because they look like revenue grabs. And you're right that money is a side benefit to this. When you collect money from people who violate the law, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you set up the appearance that this is all about money and not about safety, that creates a big problem in terms of public acceptance.
Okay, we have to take a short break in just a minute, but I want to make sure we go to Clive, Lieutenant Gary Walker. Several years in action, these red light cameras in Clive. How do you respond to Ben Stone's remarks about possible misuse here, and that it's just mostly just for making money?
The money part doesn't concern the Clive Police Department. That's up to the city fathers. The Clive Police Department is concerned about the driving public and the safety of the public that use the city streets. Now, the Iowa DOT showed that intersection with red light photo enforcement has a 25% safer than those without cameras. So I don't know where he's coming up with this is not safety. This is safety. And if it's going to help the citizens of Clive and the people who use our streets, we're going to use them.
Mm-hmm. Did you pay attention, based on earlier experiences mentioned by Ben Stone, that the implementation is really important here, that you don't misuse them and get people's backs up as sort of an unfair use of this technology?
You know, when we put these cameras into effect, we gave the public a month to get used to them, let them know who's out there. Every intersection's marked, and we do issue citations for making right turn on red, but they do not stop. The law requires everybody to stop before you make a right-hand turn on red. And if you don't, and we catch it, we issue the citation.
Okay, very good. We have to take a short break, and we'll be right back to debate the automatic photo technology, so-called red light cameras, to catch people running red lights. Of course, you can catch people with cameras who are speeding as well. Some cities in Iowa have that as well. Should we use these automated cameras to catch people running red lights? Perhaps you have them already in your city. Listeners in Clive, Council Bluffs, Davenport, Sioux City, we want to hear from you in the next couple of minutes. What difference have they made in your city? Have you been caught by that flash? Are you worried about Big Brother infringing on your civil liberties? Or is it all worth it to save some injuries, save some lives? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll be back in just a minute here on Iowa Public Radio. The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, debating this half hour for the remaining 10 minutes of this half hour. Red light cameras that are in use, increasing use in many communities across the nation, and in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, the latest community to install red light cameras. They have yet to be operational, as we understand. In the coming days, they will. Are they a good thing, an increase in safety at intersections, guarding against red light runners, or are they an infringement of our civil liberties, and perhaps just a more or less a money-making venture by communities under stress, under budgetary stress? Joining us, Lieutenant Gary Walker of the Clive Police Department. They've had red light cameras for several years. Russ Rader of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and Ben Stone of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. We want to go to calls here in just a minute. There are plenty of them. Let's talk about I want to go to Ben Stone of the Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. When we hear about your problems with potential misuse, isn't there a way to guard against misuse from the get-go? For instance, I'm just thinking of any law enforcement tool can be misused, right? A speed radar, a billy club, a pistol, handcuffs. We could say that about any technology, and we just have to make sure there are guidelines in how we use this technology. Would you be satisfied by that?
Well, I think that it's important to realize that one of the problems with this system is that the due process is lacking, and that it's more difficult to challenge your what's being claimed. I do want to go back to one thing I haven't mentioned, and that is that if you want to truly promote safety on our streets, there are better ways. And one of those is engineering of intersections, including lengthening of the yellow light interval.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually been situations, at least a half a dozen cities have been documented to have shortened the yellow light times in order to increase the revenue. And I find that to be almost criminal, that it's been demonstrated that cities have actually shortened the yellow time, which makes it a more dangerous intersection in order to get more revenue.
I want to see the evidence of that, sir. I want to see the evidence of that, sir. I mean, that
Paradise,
is
a, Paradise
that
Valley
is a,
in
that
June.
Is a, that is an assertion. Can you imagine the liability if a community intentionally shortened yellow lights to make intersections less safe?
Paradise Valley, Arizona, June of 2009. San Bernardino, California, November 2008. Fairfax County, Virginia, June 2009.
I want to see the evidence
Baytown,
of that. Baytown,
Texas, July 2009. Look
I want to see the evidence of that.
Okay, that's Google not something it. We'll be able to do here in the next 5 minutes. Let's go to our callers. Ray in Maquoketa. Hi, Ray. What do you think of this conversation? Where do you stand?
Well, I really don't mind the cameras because I agree that it tends to make it safer. What bothers me is once we start this camera criminal watching going on, where's it going to end? I mean, next thing you know, they'll be looking for other kinds of crimes and this, that, and the next thing, and they're going to be invading people's privacy of perfectly law-abiding citizens just to see if they're committing crimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben Stone of the Civil Liberties Union, you call them insidious Orwellian devices. Obviously, you're thinking, too, this is a slope to much worse things, you think. What's the picture you paint that could happen here?
Well, I think people need to be able to kind of envision the future. I mean, right now you've got a few intersections in Clive, if you live in Des Moines, and there's going to be a few more when the city of Des Moines puts them up here in a few months. But just imagine down the road, 5, 10, 15 years, where you know these cameras could be virtually everywhere. And every time you leave your home, you feel like you've got a police officer sitting in your passenger seat. It just seems to me that a lot of civil libertarians look at this like it's an existence that just doesn't feel like a free society.
Let's have Russ Rader respond to that at the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. People uncomfortable with being watched all the time, Russ Rader. Do we have to just live with that for increased safety?
Well, my response is that you don't have to worry about the cameras at red lights if you obey the law. And you don't have to worry about getting a ticket if you obey the law. We have surveillance cameras in a lot of different aspects of our lives to keep us safe. At the ATM machine, some shopping malls, and we somehow accept that, but a camera that only takes a picture of your license plate if you break the law is somehow something that is untoward, and that doesn't make any sense because these cameras do work to make our cities safer.
So these cameras do not capture your face through the windshield at all?
Most of the time, they are taking pictures of the license plate of the vehicle. Now, they're set up differently in different cities.
How do we know who's driving the vehicle if we only see the license plate, for sure?
Well, most of the time, the people driving the vehicles are the vehicle owners. But in some cases, you are ticketing the vehicle, and the person who was driving the vehicle is not the owner. But that happens in a lot of different situations. Say, you get a parking ticket. Mm-hmm. You may not have been driving your car at the time. But if somebody was driving your car in an unsafe manner and without your knowledge, wouldn't you want to know that?
Well, you made the point, though, that you know if you're not breaking the law, you don't have anything to worry about. What about wiretapping? That could be said of wiretapping. We could have everybody listening to everybody else's conversation, sort of a good old East German model here, and that would go with that rationale, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a totally different situation because you're talking about privacy rights, and no court has held that that citizens have the right to privacy when they're breaking the law on public streets.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Bonnie is calling from Muscatine. Muscatine is a place you're thinking about installing red light cameras, isn't it, Bonnie?
Yes, I think we need more cameras on the interstate that would help with kidnappers and criminal activity. It also slow down some of these truckers, and it let the cops do their job instead of chasing down speeders.
Okay. Bonnie, have you had personal experience with this, where you noted an instance recently where you wish somebody would have been caught?
Yeah, I had to call in a drunk driver who about got us, and they did catch him on the camera, and I'm glad they did because he about hit me and about 10 other people.
Okay, let's go to Donald in Iowa City. Hi, Donald.
Hi, Ben. I have definitely some issues with the cameras because we're essentially privatizing law enforcement. And I definitely think that that's a civil liberties issue. I don't think that we should be sharing revenue with the company because that could actually cause law enforcement based on some private corporation's profit margin.
Okay. Okay.
But ultimately, the issue is here, driving is not a private act. And basically, I don't think you have the right to privacy when you're operating an automobile on a public street.
Okay, Russ Rader, are there across the country in the 400 communities that you mentioned, different schemes, different setups? Are they all operated by private firms, or are there other schemes?
Well, typically the way they're set up is there are private firms that set up the cameras and do the automated process of mailing the tickets. What we don't get involved in the process of setting these systems up, but we do recommend that police officers review the tickets to make sure that that the offense the violation is a proper one to generate a ticket. So there has to be strong law enforcement oversight.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Kate in Belmont. Quickly, we have a break coming up. I want to ask our guests to please hold on. We're going to carry this conversation past the break a few minutes. If you could, stay on until about quarter till. And let's go to Kate in Belmont. Quickly, Kate, we have to take a break in a minute.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I think with the cameras being in use, they are just not a substitute for humans and human common sense. A lot of times they could catch people who may not be criminally liable, people that have a seizure or people that slide on an ice. And if you're running a red light or turning right and doing a slow and go and it's for a safety purpose, then a lot of times you won't be found to be breaking the law because you're complying with the safety purpose of a statute.
Mm-hmm. But we don't have, as pointed out earlier, do we have officers to check all these intersections 24/7? We don't have the finances to do that. Kate, what about that point?
I think the cameras are causing more problems than good. I've been a passenger in a camera or in a car when a camera has gone off. The flash is extremely bright. It's terrifying. The entire intersection was startled. I do not think it's a good idea at all because if without an officer actually being there to assess the situation, there may not have been a danger in the first place, and the cameras may actually create more.
Okay, Kate, thank you very much. We'll have to wait for a response after our break. Thank you, Kate from Belmont. When we come back, we'll have another 10 or 15 minutes of conversation with Ben Stone of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, Russ Rader, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, Lieutenant Gary Walker of the Clive Police Department, one of the several communities in Iowa having installed red light cameras that will catch you if you run through a red light, and you'll get something in the mail. We want to know your opinion on this. Should we use these automated cameras to catch people running red lights? You have them in your city. What's your experience? What difference have they made? 1-866-780-9100. We continue this conversation for a few minutes after the break. 1-866-780-9100 or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll discuss a new edition of the popular History Channel program, Modern Marvels, which explores the topic of eggs and features several Iowa State University experts. That coming up in just a few minutes. But right now, a red-hot discussion about red light cameras, the debate over them. Should we use automatic photo technology to catch people running red lights? Well, Cedar Rapids is the latest city in Iowa to install red light cameras at some intersections. They will be operational in the coming days. Other cities in Iowa that have had perhaps years of operational red light cameras include Clive, Council Bluffs, Davenport, and Sioux City. And we're talking about civil liberties issues, safety issues, about this new technology in our lives, the pros and cons of it, with Lieutenant Gary Walker of the Clive Police Department, Russ Ray, Schrader of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and Ben Stone of the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. Lieutenant Gary Walker, Russ Rader, and Ben Stone, I want to make a note. We'll take a few more calls, and then I will guarantee you that at the end of this discussion, as we wrap it up, I want to give you each a closing remark to make here. Obviously, a lot of difference of opinion on this. Let's address, though, first the call we had before we went to break, the woman, the listener, who said, you know, she's been flashed by these things. They can actually cause accidents. Do you find that to be the case, Lieutenant Gary Walker, the Clive Police Department, several years at these intersections? Have you heard that complaint? This flash can in itself disturb, distract, cause an accident.
There is a bright light when the camera goes off, and we have had no accidents that have been caused by this flash.
Mm-hmm.
But it is bright, especially at night. It's a little bright in the daytime. But it has not caused any accidents. And the people who violate this, we pick up their rear license plates, not their face.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Russ.
So
yep.
The people coming at it, it doesn't go right in their eyes.
Russ Rader, looking nationwide at the 400-some communities that have red light cameras, is this a problem? Can the technology be adjusted so as not to perhaps distract?
Well, I think the a point that I would make about that is something that we touched on earlier, which is, you know, these systems are not set up to be speed traps to catch drivers unawares and startle them. As Lieutenant Walker pointed out, in communities that use the cameras, there's usually a strong public education component that tells drivers that the program is going to be implemented. And drivers also know where the cameras are because of the prominent signs that indicate where the cameras are located. I've driven through areas in Iowa with red light cameras, and as a visitor, I'm aware of where they are.
Okay, Ben Stone of the American Civil Liberties Union, that satisfy you? Well marked. It's not a case of get you, but just necessary to have that little flash to make sure the picture gets taken.
Well, I haven't heard any concerns about the flash causing accidents, but it's certainly true that any intersection that has these really should have prominent signs. I mean, that's only fair.
Okay, let's go to our callers, get in a few callers before we have to close this discussion. Adam in Davenport. Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, just my thought. First of all, I'm not against the cameras in general, but my question, if you were to run a red light and get pulled over by a cop on the street, say you had been being tailgated or some extenuating circumstances, you can appeal that, and a lot of times the cop will understand the situation. With these cameras, A, there's nobody to actually talk to, and B, even if you do take the ticket to court, it may be sent to you so long afterwards that you don't remember the situation.
Okay, I think there is certainly a right of appeal here, isn't there, Lieutenant Walker?
Yes, there's two. We have two appeals. The first one is administrative hearing with our city prosecutor. She'll sit down and go over the citation with you. If she believes there is a violation, she'll continue with it, and the defendant still has a right to see a judge.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, everything goes to court if they want to go to court.
Maybe this
but
doesn't.
How long after you get it? How long after you ran the red light? Because say you were being tailgated, you will remember that for a couple of days. But if you don't get the ticket for a month after you ran the red light, you're not going to remember the specifics anymore.
Well, that's true too. It does take a while for the defendant to get the citation.
Lieutenant Walker, let me ask you this: in your experience, are there people who are photographed going through red lights, and then later it's decided, well, we're not really entirely sure about that, so the appeal, either formally or informally, does result in someone not getting a ticket?
That's correct. Sometimes it does happen. There are extenuating circumstances. The police officer is not the final judge on this. It's our prosecutor and the judge.
Mm-hmm. What do... Ben Stone, you want to get in here from the...
Yeah, if I could just say, cool. I mean... the ACLU of Iowa's challenge to the traffic cameras a couple years ago was based on a home rule argument that basically there's a uniform traffic laws for the state and that localities shouldn't be able to have their kind of own, and that didn't work. Due process arguments to challenge these really have not been litigated very much. So there's still the possibility, and the caller's right, that there's concerns about the level of proof, the timing, the fact that it is the owner, not necessarily the driver. So there's various due process concerns that are also, I think, shortcomings of the system.
Okay, very good. We are running out of time. I want to go quickly to each of you. Please limit yourselves to a minute or less here. Let's start with Ben Stone, since we're with you already. Is there anything that we could do, A, B, C, D, implement in terms of using red light technology, red light cameras, to satisfy your civil liberties concerns?
Yes, I would say two things. One is that there are engineering ways that you can promote safety, that, and some of them don't even cost much. If you explore lengthening the yellow light interval, that has been shown to be a very good way to improve the safety of these intersections. The drawback is it doesn't create tickets, and that can be a concern for the cities. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would talk about is that limiting these type of tickets to straight line, you know, going through the intersection as opposed to the right-hand turns, we've actually made an open records request to Clive. They cannot tell us how many of their citations are for right-hand turns. And that's information we think the people of Clive should be able to know about, because if a lot of the revenue is coming from these turns, and there are turns in Clive where both the side traffic is turning left and you're turning right, and it's literally impossible for there to be a collision, and those are still infractions and they're still getting tickets. So those are two things. Limit these to people driving through the intersection that can be dangerous, not the right-hand turns, and then explore lengthening the yellow light intervals and other engineering improvements to truly promote safety.
Okay, very good. And back to the earlier discussion, we have to look at the data on this, but Ben Stone, when you told me that the data is not clear here, I myself, who hasn't had the experience of nearly being run over or hit by a red light runner? I have, in 1 week, I can in the summer, I can stand and watch the walk sign tell me it's okay to walk. If I would not look up, I would have been dead several times over. I just wonder about the data that you're pointing to. Where can we go to find your data?
Well, just let me point out that I think you're misunderstanding. Clearly, when people are under the impression that they will get a ticket if they go through a red light that's, you know, been yellow and then turned red, that's understood and that's clear. The problem is that there are other things that happen at intersections with cameras where people slam on their brakes, and that creates other issues of safety. And the data is really quite all over the place, that there is very good, rigorous studies that show that the people stopping quickly to not get a ticket is dangerous, and that counterbalances the safety that comes from the other aspects.
Okay, point taken. A quick wrap-up from Lieutenant Gary Walker and then to Russ Rader very quickly, please. Lieutenant Walker, any final comments for us?
I believe these are tools that the cities could use, and it's a tool to make the streets safer. Just like I said earlier, the Iowa DOT showed the intersection with red light cameras are 25% safer. And if that makes my family out there driving safer, that's what I want.
Okay, Lieutenant Walker of the Clive Police Department, thank you. Russ Rader, final words, quickly.
One thing I would just say on the issue of the there's a much greater danger of somebody blowing through a red light and slamming into somebody in a T-bone crash than someone slamming on their brakes to avoid a ticket and having a fender bender. And red light cameras are a strong deterrent. They cut down on red light running and crashes.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Russ Rader, Lieutenant Gary Walker, and Ben Stone, thank you very much for the interesting discussion, and certainly a discussion I'm sure we'll revisit in future editions of The Exchange. Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you to our callers. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And each year in the United States, 280 million hens lay 80 billion eggs. One of the world's most affordable sources of protein. In a new show, the popular History Channel program Modern Marvels charts the journey of the egg from the hen house to breakfast table, from massive traditional Iowa farms where millions of eggs move from hens to delivery trucks without even being touched by human hands, to the cage-free and pasture-raised farms where chickens have more room to roam, but consumers pay the price for this. This new episode features several Iowa State University experts. It aired last Thursday for the first time, but will be rebroadcast this Saturday at 7 p.m. on the History Channel. Let's listen to an excerpt from the beginning of that program. Let's listen to that in just a moment. I want to introduce our guests. We'll listen to the beginning of the program. Joining me now, two people from the Iowa State University who are on the show, Hong Wei Shin. She is director of the Egg Industry Center, professor of agriculture and biosystems engineering. Hong Wei Shin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
To you.
Good to be here.
And Kevin Shalinkshe, is that the correct pronunciation of your name? I'm sorry.
Shalinsky.
Shalinsky, thank you very much for hopefully excusing that, and for joining us, Associate Professor of Food Science and Human Nutrition. Before we talk a little bit, let's hear about this show on the journey of the egg.
Welcome to the egg capital of America, Iowa, where every year 50 million hens lay more than 12 billion eggs. In the entire U.S., there are as many ladybirds as people, 280 million. Coincidentally, each American eats about the same number of eggs a single chicken puts out, 250 per year. So in effect, every person has a hen with his or her name on it. This mega chicken coop in Stewart, Iowa, is part of Rose Acre Farms, the nation's second largest egg producer. Every day, 1.5 million chickens housed here lay more than 800,000 eggs.
And that's an excerpt from the Modern Marvels Eggs show to be rebroadcast this Saturday at 7 p.m. on the History Channel, featured in that hour-long show. Two of our guests, Hong Wei Shin and also Kevin Shalinkshe. Sorry, help me with your name again, Kevin?
Shalinsky.
Shalinsky, I'm sorry about that. And let's talk to Professor Hong Wei Shin first of all. You study the environmental challenges that operations like Rose Acre Farms encounter in large-scale egg plants. Discuss some of the challenges when operations are that big.
Well, the environmental issues are one of the challenges the egg industry is facing, and of course now there's animal welfare issues. Based on the nature of the operation, what's the number of birds we have, and the nature of the manure, ammonia is the probably the most challenging gases we're dealing with. And, of course, the EPA has some requirement for reporting the amount of ammonia being emitted from our operation. And in this case, for example, 100 pounds a day. So what we're trying to do is to find some practical solutions that producers could use to mitigate the emissions. Obviously, we cannot totally eliminate, but certainly we can do something to mitigate. In this particular case, we're looking at dietary manipulation to reduce ammonia emission without adversely affecting the bird performance.
Mm-hmm. So to explain the ammonia, the manure dries of the chickens, the hens, the ammonia forms from that, and then we have the problem that can cause some, what, respiratory problems for the chickens and for the people who work there?
Correct. If ammonia is at a certain higher level, that could affect the health of the birds and the health of the workers. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, with our modern production systems at the bird level, especially with the modern operation system, we're able to control ammonia pretty well, typically below 20 ppm.
When you look at large-scale operations now compared to, say, 10, 20 years ago, in terms of animal rights, and that's one of the things you mentioned that's a key here, how far have we come? How did we compare with a generation ago in terms of keeping the chickens well and not causing them undue stress, I suppose?
Correct. And the egg industry has come long ways from the days when the birds housed, for example, outdoors. Of course, now there's some people using that alternative system. And there have been a lot of advancement in the housing environment control. For example, in the hot summertime, we do have those in Iowa. And we have ways to cool the air to keep the temperature at a comfort level year-round. And one of the beauty of the modern production system is that even in the cold weather, like what we're experiencing right now, we're able to control the environment, maintain the environment at a thermal comfort level, for example, 74 degrees in the barn. And compared to, you know, decades ago when basically the birds are kind of at the mercy of Mother Nature, and when outside it's cold, then they suffer. And so there are some of these disadvantages associated with these alternatives, for example, the cage-free operation, where density of the birds are not sufficient to maintain that kind of temperature. So I say the environment today in the modern production system is much superior. And we have to, when we look at the welfare, we've got to look at the entire picture.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn to Professor Shalinsky. You deal a lot with what the hens are fed, their nutrition and the nutritional value of the eggs that come out. When a hen produces organic eggs, what is it being fed? How is that different from what conventional hens are being fed?
Well, the organic label really refers to the fact that the food or the feed that they're being fed hasn't been treated with any sort of chemicals to alter it, or that they're not receiving growth hormones. So it's not so much a difference in what they're being fed, but how that feed has been treated prior to them being fed.
Mm-hmm. And we often see omega-3 enhanced egg on cartons, eggs on cartons these days. What distinguishes these eggs? How do you get it?
Well, you can. I think the bottom line with the egg is the nutritional content of the egg is going to reflect what the hen is being fed, and we can alter the content of that egg by feeding them specific products such as flaxseed oil. So the omega-3s are important in the human diet. They have a very positive effect on human health, and so we can increase the omega-3 content of the egg by specifically feeding the hen certain ingredients.
Mm-hmm. What can either of you say about the popularity of cage-free eggs and organic eggs? It seems to me, just in the places I frequent, that the popularity is growing, that people are willing to pay the extra buck or two per dozen to have the thought that the chickens are, their welfare is better.
I'll take a shot at that. So, yes, I think people should have the freedom of choosing what they like to buy, whether it's a cage-free or organic or omega-3 or the modern cage production system. If you look at the price difference, you're right, you know, the couple of bucks per dozen. Typically, on average, we're looking at 60% higher for the cage-free versus cage system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should, at the same time, we should not push a one-size-fits-all scenario. For example, everybody should be going to the cage-free operation, and that basically cut out the freedom that people, those who wish to purchase a lower price eggs, we basically eliminate that option for them.
I realize that neither of you work in the egg industry, but can either of you answer the question of the demand for these eggs? Is it going up?
There's a trend of slight going up. About 95% of the eggs produced in the United States in these modern sanitary cage operation system, but typically 5% in the alternative, and the trend is slightly going up.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about chicken welfare, we're only dealing with hens here because obviously they only produce the eggs. And last year we had a scandal in Iowa that made national news when we saw a video of male chicks just a day or two old being disposed of by being ground up alive. Has that video had any effect on the egg industry?
I don't believe so. I think, first of all, the authenticity of the video has to be examined more closely. And the company really strictly follow these procedures. Of course, just because of one or two instances, it should not paint the whole picture mm-hmm. for the entire industry. And by the way, the procedure has been approved by American Veterinary Medicine Association and is approved method being used in Europe as well.
The procedure meaning en masse being dumped into a grinder alive?
It was a quick process. And so if it's done properly, then it should be considered as a humane way of getting rid of these male chicks.
Mm-hmm. And the male chicks otherwise could have no use.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Do we get a better tasting egg if a chicken is happy?
I'm not sure about that. I would suspect if the chicken is healthy and getting a good source of nutrients, that's what's going to affect the egg. Whether you can equate that to some characteristic of being happy or not, I think that would be very tough to evaluate.
Hmm. Professor Hongwei Shin, do you have anything to say about that, the psychological state of the chicken influencing the taste, the nutritional value of an egg?
Well, the studies have shown that whether it's the pasture or cage-free or modern cage operation, the nutrition value of the eggs is very similar. I agree with Dr. Slinsky. So obviously the producers try to keep the birds happy. You know, if they're not happy, they probably won't be productive. Everybody knows that. Because of that, they try very hard to keep the highest standard for animal welfare issues as much as it can.
Recently we reported about the concern at Iowa State University about a recent California vote that sets new standards for the egg industry. Residents in California approved a proposition in November that forces producers to raise egg-laying chickens in larger cages. Now, the concern here was that is one based on a false premise, perhaps, that chickens don't need to spread their wings. Is this disinformation? And the other concern, is it spreading to Iowa? If it is not needed, do chickens need a lot of room or more room than they're getting?
The chickens are social animals. If you observe these chickens in these barns at night and most of the time during the day, they tend to be in the colony. And so what California is passing the Proposition 2, I think a lot of the producer may not be as well informed when they cast their vote. And there's a lot of ramifications, especially for our situation in Iowa. For example, I mentioned that during this
very
time
quickly,
of year,
we have less than a minute. Yes, yeah. Quickly, the ramifications?
The ramifications, the environmental issues, the number of lands, the amount of land needed, and the amount of actual feed needed. And also the potential food safety issues we have to deal with.
Okay, very good. We'll have to leave it there. I wish we had more time. Professor Hongwei Shin of Iowa State University and Professor Kevin Shalinsky, thank you very much for coming into the studio and telling us about this feature. It is to be aired, Modern Marvels, Eggs, rebroadcast this Saturday, 7 p.m. on the History Channel. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.